I've got enough footage of sites nobody's seen before to last me years.
Oh, dude.
This shocked me. I mean, this place is 8% excavated.
That's mind-blowing.
How much more of this is underneath?
Oh, my God.
It literally looks like a giant just came and kicked a tower.
Hey, this is a Project Unity exclusive.
What the f*** is this point?
This one is where they went inside and found, like, mummies down here.
What?
At the bottom layers. 50 feet down. I mean...
Whoa, that looks like modern. That's like a Göbekli Tepe type of thing, where it's like, oh yeah, we've got tons more left to find here.
Dude, tons more.
This is Raoul's, he filmed this, and this is bloody interesting, to be honest.
Dude, I don't... Like, I'm letting you guys take over. I filmed it, you guys take over. You know what I mean? Like... I mean, for me to be able to, literally say, found an unregistered megalithic site. I mean, like, that was one of the main goals of my life.
I already know people are gonna love this interview, man.
Our conversation, I was just telling my fiance this, like, I haven't had as much fun on, like, on one of these podcasts talking about, like, just letting our minds go with stuff. And it's like your podcast is at the top of the list doing that. And so, like, I think that's props to who you are. You know what I mean? So, like,
thank you, bro. Whack that subscribe button with your finger right now. That's the best way to support me. Drop a comment below in the comment section. Like the video. Share the video online. But above all else, hit that subscribe button. Make sure you tickle that notification bell as well. Otherwise, YouTube doesn't send you the videos.
No, I appreciate that. Like, I mean, you know, for me, it's always been about trying to make it more of a conversation. Plus, I'm actively interested and researching these subjects. So it's not like I'm just getting someone on because it's a hot topic. And I'm like, oh, right, okay, let's get 10 questions together to figure out what to say. Like, I'm into these subjects, do you know what I mean? So it's just a pleasure for me. It's honestly a pleasure for me, and I'm sure you get this as well. Because, like, actually, have you had guests on? Do you interview people?
I haven't. I did that. I did, like, two, maybe. I did Dr. Barnhart, but that's also, like, I don't know, man. My plate is so full.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know how, I mean.
You're busy literally kicking gravel out your boots because you're actually going out to these places and documenting them, which is, like, the most epic thing you could be doing. And, no, I mean, like, I ask you that because sometimes you get, like, a guest who's quite stale. Like, they're not very interactive and conversational, so it's a bit rigid, and you end up going into that question-answer format. So, for me, it's always really nice when someone's equally conversational, and I think we've just got a good energy in that regard and a similar interest. So, it flows nicely, bro. It flows nicely.
Yeah, I agree, and I love that, I mean, did you put out the full video yet of the... your latest ancient tech?
Oh no, I'm still chipping away.
You're still chipping away there.
This is rose quartz granite. These blocks are absolutely gigantic.
Fuse them together for a binding agent, which would probably be metal.
Red granite is about 7.5 out of 10 hardness. Bronze, 3.5, 4. So they couldn't have done this with bronze.
This is the temple entry door, because you can tell because it has a double door. And that's typically a sign that you're coming into a sacred site and into a temple. And so they leave the best work for the high temple work.
I think the Sacred Valley of Peru might be one of the most jaw-dropping areas of the world I've ever been to. Chipping away, yeah. After we finish up here, I'm just going to get back to editing. Yeah, I'm about 30 minutes into post production, and I think this is going to be about an hour and a half. Might push an hour and a half.
So let me. We haven't started.
Yeah, we're mills already.
All right. Well, already. All right.
I sneak it in. It's a psychological tactic. Sometimes people get nervous once it's like, right, bro, listen, yeah, we're recording.
Yeah, we're on. Yeah.
I just subtly tricked you into it.
Dude, it's so funny because like the first time I ever went, I forget who it was, but the first time I ever went live, it was that moment and it threw me off and I was like, can we start over?
It still happens to me, even though I'm so used to interviewing people at this point. Like, it still happens to me. Like, it depends on the guest. Like, for example, and you shouldn't be offended by this, I'm relaxed with you because I consider you a friend and it's easier to talk to you. If I've got someone who's kind of high profile, like a serious dude, like intelligence or something like that, I'll always like catch myself in that introduction when I'm listening back, like, man, I'm nervous. You can tell I'm nervous. Like, I'm talking too fast, or I don't take a breath at the right time. You end up out of breath. And it's like tricks of the trade that you just learn over time of interacting with the public, because it's like one of the biggest fears of most people is public speaking anyway, isn't it? So it's like, you know, it's kind of understandable that you start acting outside of the norm when you get on the record like that, which is why I try and do it sneakily.
Well, it works, and I can dig it, man. My first interview with Dr. Ed Barnhart, thank God for editing. And like, I was like kind of awestruck, you know, because I've been following his work. He like said yes to me, and I just had this list of questions and just like the awkward pauses where I'm thinking about things.
I hear you, bro. Yeah, no, Phil. Oh, post-production magic is so good. Like, you know, I'm kind of like a bit of a stickler for it. So I'll even get rid of people's ums and ahs and like gaps like that. Just close it up a bit so that it's a bit faster. And, you know, it's all just kind of part of the process of learning how to do these things online. It's like, for example, with the recent Ancient Technologies episode, I've started doing like just a little zoom in when I'm talking, like these little things that I've noticed other podcasters doing, and it does have a nice effect to it. And it's just like, you know, picking up tricks of the trade as you go along. But anyway, enough about that. How was Joe Rogan, brother? How was Joe Rogan?
It was awesome. It was awesome. You know,
it's a surreal experience, isn't it?
It is incredibly surreal. But just like our conversation here, I mean, the excitement is palpable. You know what I mean? And that for me, it really, in that setting, in such a close setting and a one-on-one setting, it really helps to recreate the excitement of being there. And then, you know, it sets off conversation in a much different way. And so I just, it was awesome. And so, I mean, you went on and he's got everything down to a science, you know, like just, you get there, you record it, and
it's quite quick as well. I don't know if it was the same with you, but like once I sat down on the desk and put the headphones on, he's just kind of like, hey man, what's up? Good to have you.
I couldn't turn off my phone. Like, yeah. I was so shocked. and when it ended, he was like, you know, all right, let's grab a picture. The classic Rogan picture. I saw him post that.
Got to get it.
And then I had talked to like Jamie beforehand, and Joe likes to play pool afterwards and to like wind down from, I guess, you know, his work. And so he went to go do that after we like said goodbye. He invited me to the comedy club, which was amazing. He performed a set, which
yeah, dude, it's
dope. Like, it was all people I've seen on his channel and
yeah, on TV, man.
It was awesome. And as I'm leaving, the security guard comes and gets me, and he's like, you want to come back here? I said, sure. And Joe's back there with all the comedians. And he's introducing me to all these comedians.
Yeah.
Like, this is Raul. Like, the stuff he's finding, and like, it'll blow your mind. He blah, 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 blah. And the level of excitement, I was like,
hell yeah, dude.
All right, it went well. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, it went well. It went well. Did you get picked up by a guy called Rebel?
I don't know who that is.
No, the driver wasn't like some like Anunnaki 9-foot giant covered in tattoos.
No,
okay.
I got a different driver.
You got a different driver?
Yeah, the he said his the usual guy was off, so it was the guy who owned the company.
Now the reason I say that is because when I was coming back on the way back from the show, and Rebel, the guy, such a cool dude. He's like a firefighter normally, but then he just does, like, you know, the taxiing for the Joe Rogan Experience. And but he said, like, oh, did you get invited to the mothership? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, that means he likes you. He doesn't do that for everyone, so dude, well done. You also did a really good job. Like, it's a kind of like stamp of validation from Joe Rogan, apparently.
Dude, love it. Now, thank you for that insight. I mean, honestly, it was very like I said, it was a very streamlined process. And so, and I've heard that, if I'm hearing it from you, and I've heard that from one or two other people, and so there's also, like, I rewatched it. I was like, oh shit, I didn't even remember talking about that.
Oh yeah, we go into a world like fugue state, like full on fugue state for real, dude. Like, I couldn't remember a single fucking thing I'd said. And then I looked back and I was like, damn, I went a little deep on some shit.
Dude, that's one thing I loved about your guys' episode, is just the amount of things on the spectrum covered was just like vast, you know. But it worked. It worked so well, you know what I mean? Like, it was perfect for the Joe's interested in, perfect for yours, and it just, you felt that the entire
time. Well, that's the thing, and this is what's really cool about you, dude, because, like, I'm kind of dipping my toes into the ancient history stuff. I've been a multivariate researcher, different things, and I do think a lot of them connect when you look at, like, the bleeding edge of modern physics and acoustic sciences, and you start going, whoa, hang on a second, there's weird connotations in ancient history towards this. And so there's a lot of kind of cross-pollination between the various subjects I've discussed, but you're hardcore into trying to find these areas in Peru, and that's what's awesome about you. So you went on Joe Rogan with a whole bunch of different video footage that you were showing your expedition recently, so I'd love for you to tell people a little bit about your recent expedition. I wish I could have been there. We're gonna have to try and do something this year in Peru together, but yeah, please tell the people what you've been up to, man.
So this last expedition, I was down in Peru for 42 days. And
damn.
I went all over the country. I mean, started off in Lima, flew up to Chiclayo, stayed in the Chiclayo region for a while, then went up to Juarez. And, you know, we'll touch on Chavín, because you also brought Chavín up on Rogan. And then went to the Ayacucho region, the Huánuco region, the Cusco region, and then just all between Cusco and Lake Titicaca. I was there for 2 weeks, and I just drove all around the lake and areas closer to Arequipa, the Arequipa region. I mean, I went all over the country.
And was this solo, or were you kind of clicked up with someone?
It was solo. It was in the first week, wasn't solo, but then after that, it was completely solo. So it was just, I think it was George Howard who kind of coined the phrase, at least talking to me, like this trail magic that happens, you know, I just running into the right people at the right time who can take me to these places. And I mean, I've got 5 terabytes worth of footage.
Dude, five terabytes.
I've got my work shut out for me, man. Like,
yeah, you do. I mean, I freak out over my 500 gigabytes of Peru or Egypt. That's a serious. I mean, 42 days of filming. Was it, you say 42 days?
42 days.
42, that's incredible, man. So, like, obviously, there's going to be so many different things that were freaking out for you. But is there also, do you have footage to hang that we could
wrap up? Absolutely, and I'm more than happy to send you that footage too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Thread it in for that, you know, post-production stuff. You know, I like to do that. I mean, like, any kind of place that particularly stuck out is interesting, especially because, and people need to remember that Raul really tries to find places off the beaten track. Like, you know, I've done some really interesting work recording Oliente Tambo and Sacsayhuaman. A lot of people have been to these places, and there are so many areas in Peru that are just completely off the map. And one of the things that Raul has really been kind of, like, you know, turning heads over is the fact that, and I'm sure a lot of you have actually watched our recent interview before he went on Joe Rogan. If not, you surely watched him on Joe Rogan. You're finding stuff off of the, not just off the beaten track, but actually off of really the records of history, other than maybe a couple of cursory studies that didn't really go anywhere. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about this recent expedition and some of the highlights of this for you.
So, you know, there were a handful of places that did not have any Ministry of Culture sign, that did not, one of my most recent videos, my most recent video on YouTube is this unregistered megalithic site that the townspeople have been trying to, get on the Ministry of Culture's radar for a long time. And even a representative of the Ministry of Culture from the town said, you know, this needs more research. It needs more study. It's, I don't have stray clips of that because it's on the YouTube, but feel free to splice it in. I met this guy Romulo, who was the ex-president of the little campesino there, and I mean, this guy took, you know, 12 hours out of his day to drive with me for 5 or 6 hours to get to this place and hike there, and it just fortunately he knew the history. And so this place was really unique, and you find this a lot, and you've seen it, that cultures are, it's, the Spanish are always building on top of what was there. So this particular site ended up becoming a Spanish mine. And you can see that because there's chimneys and there's arches there. And you're like, that never, nobody in the Andes was building like a Roman arch, you know what I mean? So that was definitely Spanish. But there's also mega huge blocks, like almost megalithic stonework there. And so what happens often is not only do the subsequent cultures end up building on top of the previous culture, but the Spanish did that too. And especially with the mines, they took over all the mines that they could find. It's in the Spanish Chronicles. I mean, they just...
And are they actually, like, are they building in the same kind of area as these megalithic blocks, or are they actually incorporating any of this stuff into their own structures?
They repurposed a lot of it.
Right, which kind of speaks to how impressive and good these blocks are in the first place. So they're like, oh, you know what, we might as well grab these and use these as well.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, so what I believe was there's evidence of construction at that site of pre-Inca stuff. I think that the Inca, though, did end up using that site for mining. It's because, I mean, the Incas were just, they were mining a lot. And so, and really that helped the Spanish when they took over all those things. They just ended up putting the wheel there. And, but it was already a, I don't know enough about mining, but for minerals, but it was, the infrastructure was already there from the Incas, maybe before them, for the water to pass over the minerals to grind things out. And so that was one of the highlights because it, I mean, for me to be able to literally say found an unregistered megalithic site, you know what I mean? Like that was one of the main goals of my life.
They're like far out. Like how hard is it to get to that particular repurposed megalithic area, mining area? Trekking
is not the word. It was a journey. I mean,
yeah, but you can't just park your car on the road and be like, oh, let's just wander down to this place.
No,
it's curious out there in the wilderness type of situation.
And like the roads you're driving on, man. I mean, I made sure to, you know, a lot of people on YouTube are like, you know, get right to the site. And like the adventure is the half of it.
You have to understand that it's like, this is how I got to this place. And you need to kind of respect that.
I put 3.5 hours of driving into 20 seconds.
Right. I hate you, bro.
But I mean, the driving is just, it's beautiful. It's scary, you know, cause you got a cliff that's just, I mean, you've been on the roads out there in the Andes.
It's
like
wild, yeah.
It is a one pathway carved.
Absolutely.
Every mountain. And then if a car is coming the other way, you're like, you're right up against the wall or your tires damn near hanging off to let them pass or to pass them. I look back on it, the whole adventure and the amount of time something that could have gone wrong.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah. It's great to look back on in hindsight and be like, well, yeah. Fine, I'm all right. Back to the next adventure, you know?
So that site was, it was tucked away in a valley. So just, it's kind of isolated, but there is other evidence of megalithic stuff within 3 hours, I'd say, anywhere driving. So this site here.
So we got the ashlar blocks.
And this is. I'm so glad I didn't crash my drone.
That's a great shot. And again, this is not like, you know, somewhere that someone can just buy a ticket to go see. This is literally out in the middle of the wilderness and it's just not being documented properly.
This one is called, so it's called Huanucopampa.
Okay.
And it is.
Wow, it's huge.
Dude, this is, I've been misquoting it. This site is 8% excavated.
8%.
8%.
How do they know there's so much more left?
You see it, man. You see it everywhere. So this is, it's so a mix of so much construction. This is what you see in Cusco. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. This is like the really tight fitting kind of like what I think they call it ashlar block masonry, right?
Yeah. And then this, like these is like Inca longhouses almost where they were like kind of holding court. But what you see here where my mouse is, this little pathway, all these entrances are the megalithic stones that are fit together without mortar.
So are these walls that we're seeing that kind of collapsed, they have mortar, are these Inca mortar walls?
That was Inca mortar walls.
Right, but they're built around some surviving remnants of what's clearly megalithic precision without mortar construction.
And the ones that are standing up
You can see it. You can see it clearly here.
Exactly. And what I typically found at many of these places was like I went to a few Inca sites, like and that are built out, they're Inca.
Yeah.
However, every now and then you'd see one of the Inca homes, like the Colcas, the entrance to it was built with this
right.
Right? And so like
almost like they kind of came across that and were like, well, use that as a foundation. Build around that, like, you know. Exactly. And you see that in Cusco and you see it in Ollantaytambo, like in the actual towns where modern buildings have used and reincorporated the ancient megalithic structure because it's so engineeringly sound, like, you know.
Absolutely, man. And this so
is amazing.
And so you have this whole space that looks like a. You have. Two or three spaces here where that megalithic architecture is still standing.
Yeah. I mean, this here on the left, where this large structure here looks like it's precision made, or is that?
It is. And they've done some stuff to kind of like repurpose it.
Right. Right.
But all the stuff around it, you know, is just like the kind of cobblestone.
Yeah. And so is there, there's no active archaeology happening here?
No. And I mean, they have it open for tourism. Like, you have to buy a ticket to get in there.
Okay, so this is one of the ones where you can just turn up a tourist.
There's nobody there. It's so hard to get to.
Wow. Is there even like a dude sitting there in a little hut, like waving?
There was one woman who was taking your tickets, and
she must be bored, man. Just sitting there so fucking day, like.
I mean, and
maybe these people should be turning up. Like, holy shit, there's a human being here. Like, welcome.
Nobody goes. I asked her.
Wow.
Like, nobody. It's not easy to get to.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, it was so hard to get to. They're rebuilding the road, but they've been doing this for years from
Florida. Thank you, Raul, for coming here and filming in drone footage, because no one else has done this shit.
Dude, it's so 8%, man. This place
that's
is like
wild, like, bro. That's like a Göbekli Tepe type of thing, where it's like, oh yeah, we got tons more left to find here.
Dude, tons more. And I'll show you, because it gets real interesting.
Oh, it's great. I'm so happy.
So, okay, I'm going to show you a close-up of this in a little bit. But if you look here underneath this little hut thing, that megalithic architecture goes underground.
Ooh.
I get close up, but you can see. So this is all above the ground.
Yeah, you can see it's kind of just poking down a bit. Yep, I can see.
So, you know, maybe somebody will watch this. I'd love to hear your take when I show you the close up, but the blocks almost look different, and I don't know if it's because they've been buried underneath and uncovered.
Right.
So I don't know if like the color has been affected. But so you see here, you see this architecture, but then also this kind of mimicking it, but with the.
But this is the thing that, and I was literally just saying this in my like voiceover for my next episode, is that the thing with Peru is you have such a stark juxtaposition. Like there's a real contrast that's literally right next to each other, because a lot of the times the engineering seems to kind of like emanate from a central point. Like you'll find incredible precise bedrock work, and then next to that incredibly precise bedrock work, you'll see the megalithic, and then you'll see the simple stone structures as if it's coming out emanating from a central source that they were trying to replicate, but were losing the skill set to do so. And like, you know, Peru, I just found even more than Egypt, was just such a fascinating one to like look to the left and look to the right. And it's like, wait, we're being told the same people did these same structures? Like, come on, buddy.
Like, I don't.
And again, usually there's a lot more destruction with the megalithic sites. And, you know, a lot of the megalithic work you'll find, again, like just tiny remnants of it, right? Little bits like this. And then a lot of the Inca walls are relatively untouched or relatively unimpacted in the same sense as the megalithic, which would mean that, you know, clearly the damage that was done to these very large scale multi-ton structures was done at a different time period.
And you know, one thing you pointed on, and you see this in Cusco especially. I mean, one of the things I'm fascinated with most is how the tradition of kind of building with the land. So you'd have those, and you went into the caves, and you've seen this everything carved out of the bedrock, the huge boulders, and then also like some megalithic architecture. So you have the boulder is a wall in part of this structure. And so like, I just love that person.
It's mind blowing.
Like you using the earth to create these more modern at the time structures. So it's just like this.
I struggle to think of another place in the world where it's done on this scale. You know what I mean? Like really?
I've got enough footage of sites nobody's seen before to last me years. Dense things are in Peru. It's so strange that this was, I said it on Rogan. I mean, this was a cradle, beyond a cradle of civilization. So let's keep going. So
Keep going, brother. This was great. Loving it. It's so good to have this modern footage now.
So this is really cool too.
Wow. Oh wow, so you got some carving. Do I spot a carving of a monkey?
My Quechua guide told me this is actually the tail is too long. They call it like the feline temple, like the fertility temple. So it was some sort of feline. But my Quechua guide in Cusco, you can actually see something like this in, it's right near there's a site near the Temple of the Moon in Cusco.
Okay, yeah.
And
the Temple of it's called the Temple of the Monkey, right? Where it's heavily degraded, like really barely conceivable. And it's just, I've got footage of it. I'll be literally layering it over as we talk right now, because it's almost that, then you've got the curling tail coming up.
So my guide said it's actually, from his perspective, not a monkey.
Okay.
They have these large river otters when you're in Cusco and you see all the signs for the tours and they're like, come to the Amazon, the Manu National Forest, you'll see these things. And they're these huge dog sized river otters that have the tail. And if we're going with the notion that this was for fertility, and so you have the stone, which is the masculine, and then you have something symbolic of water, that would make sense if it's a river otter, because then you have that duality,
right? Interesting.
And so on each of these like I showed you before in the aerial.
It's a weird tail, though, for a for an otter.
It's a
like a curly. No, no, really.
I could be wrong. There's... well, but take, we'll take, see if like an And or an Amazonian river otter or something. We'll look it up.
Yeah, I'm gonna, if it's got a curly tail, my mind's gonna be blown. I'm looking it up right now. Amazonian river otter.
It should be like a big black looking creature.
Oh, you know what? It does actually. Holy shit! Hang on a second.
Let right. Me... That's it. Yep.
That's a long tail, bro. That could curl up. That could curl up. So there we go. Confirmed. Confirmed. That's a very interesting otter.
So that's the thing. Like this, there was clearly a connection between the Andean cultures and whatever was happening in the Amazon. You don't get the symbolism of a river otter without going to see it.
Well, I mean, you know, and then you think about all of the various scans that have been done over the Amazon basin, just revealing that there was so much infrastructure here that we didn't understand was there previously. So, you know, the idea that there was maybe a complex civilization there that was interacting with people in the upper highlands of Peru, very reasonable.
Very reasonable. Very reasonable. So this is walking through the site.
Okay.
And so you can see these... And so if we're looking straight ahead. When you look behind me, there are, I don't know, four or five more of these megalithic arches just kind of in a row.
Completely, like in alignment. Yeah, yeah.
In alignment, yeah.
Wow. Now, something that someone like Brian Forrester might say here if he was looking at this is like all of the blackened areas of the stone. Like, what are your opinion on that? Because it does seem like there is some evidence in Peru of heat damage and elements of destruction that could imply like solar events. So do you have any thoughts on like the way it looks in terms of damage?
I mean, there is strong indication something happened. I mean, something happened. I do remember seeing, in, especially in Cuzco, there's actually, I don't think
like
I
some heavily blackened stones and stuff like
in a place called Vilcaswaman. There is strong evidence of it. Just it looks like it's been burnt,
right?
And like, how do you get that on stone?
Yeah,
you know, like, but also not. Not in a way, I mean, so I'm trying to play the skeptic here. Like, could the Spanish have tried to set fire to it? I mean, the way some of those burn marks look.
Some of the stuff I saw in Peru as well, and like, so, you see it in the Chincana Chica in Sacsayhuaman and some areas in Ollantaytambo where it looks vitrified, like glass-like texture. And that, to me, is very interesting.
I agree with that. I mean, it almost looks, I mean, you go into some of the caves and it's beyond them having fires in the caves, having soot.
Oh yeah. Well, you can't get glass like stone from that. That is incredibly high temperatures. So it's definitely a big question mark.
I mean, I didn't really realize the full extent until I of the tunnels that are underneath Cuzco and not just the tunnels that, you know, we fortunately both had the opportunity to explore with the Chincana project, but in the caves,
right?
Like the tunnel systems that are in there. Like I just had to stop. I was like, this could go on. I couldn't fit, or it could go on forever. And you don't know where it goes. And so it makes me think of places like Derinkuyu, like where if something happened, that's where you want to go. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel like, I mean, like, you've been to Zone X, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Places like that made me think, like, you know, if you were able to kind of just keep journeying down, you might come out into a little pocket of old civilization, Derinkuyu style, you know, survivors underground. It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
I would love to be able to get, like, a little rover thing, you know, and just kind of try to map it out.
I mean, it'll be very fun when, and I can't imagine it's that far away when you've got like, you know, 4K drones the size of a golf ball or smaller that you could just kind of unleash and just send them down in caverns. Like.
Or your boy Filippo, man.
Yeah. Like, send him down.
With the tech, man, like with the SAR technology, I mean, that would.
Yeah. I'm going to be hanging out with him in Malta at the end of this month.
I saw that. That's awesome, dude.
I'm going to definitely put a word in his ear about Peru. I mean, he's already got his eyes set on Sacsayhuaman and some other places. So, you know.
But I mean, like, that's it stretches the, I mean, because Zona X is on the outskirts.
Yeah.
You know, and my catch, they're everywhere, man.
They're everywhere.
Everywhere. And so, I mean, there's even stuff in the Spanish Chronicles. I don't know that it would, there's some underground, this would be amazing, but some underground labyrinth system that goes from Cusco to Tiwanaku. But in that Lake Titicaca area, there are the stories of underground tunnels.
Well, dude, and even like the architectural similarities between Peru and Egypt are very striking. And then at the same time, you have the same stories of vast subterranean infrastructure, you know, not just from the Khafre pyramid scans, but all across Egypt, the same wise elders that you would seek out in Peru, the ones in Egypt will say, oh yes, you know, we used to play down in these tunnels as children, and you'd go down into one end in Cairo and come out in Saqqara, you know, and like people have described tunnels that you could drive trucks down that only the locals know about. And so I think that there's like a really interesting shared commonality between Peru and Egypt with the infrastructure, the architecture, and the mythology around like underground labyrinths.
And that doesn't surprise me at all.
No. Yeah. Anyway, let's keep going, bro. Keep taking me through.
So this is...
classic Amazonian otters.
You reposted this, actually, from...
Yeah, no, I didn't know. I'll have you know, I DM'd him personally and said it'd be really great if you could give some credit to Pillars of the Past, because I didn't realize that it was yours until you commented.
He didn't know either.
I'm sure so much of my 4K footage is out there. It reshared fucking things. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it comes with the territory, but yes, territory. It's this Rowles. He filmed this, and this is bloody interesting, to be honest.
Dude, I don't... Like, I'm letting you guys take over. I filmed it. You guys take over. You know what I mean? Like, this is...
Yeah, like,
I...
What do you think here?
The skeptic side is like, okay, it's been erosion and exposure. But that also doesn't make sense. Why are the other ones not like that? It looks
like just two different stones. Like, what we're looking at here. So, like, one person in particular, Marcel Fonti, who has popularized the Natron theory and is very... much a proponent of the idea that they were creating artificial stone slurries that they would then use as a paste that would become hard and turn into stone over time. And that's one of the big debates over, you know, how were they creating these incredible polygonal multi-angle fitting stones. And this is weird because what it looks like red granite, and then underneath the cracked red granite, as you can see, can you zoom in on that one in particular at all? Like, underneath this one is what looks like limestone. I don't know, but it looks very much like a red cracked veneer instead of an actual block.
I mean, it's
and the red is a signature, isn't it? Like, isn't there an Amazonian myth? Isn't there like a Peruvian myth?
No, of the paste and paste, funny, right? I think that there is some Helmut Tribuch, physicist over at the Free University of Berlin, put a paper out, and it was back in 2012, and he suggested that, to make a long story short, if the Inca were mining pyrite from the mining, if you mix that with this red plant, the red plant is Cieza de Leon wrote about it, De La Vega wrote about it, Percy Fawcett wrote about it, Cabo wrote about it. Like,
wasn't there like two separate stories of a bird like breaking that plant on a stone? And
so it would take it up and it would rub the leaf in the stone, and after a little bit, the stone would have a hole in it. So that was the observations made by, you know, Fawcett and some of these other. There's also a story in, I haven't released it yet, but it's one of the Spanish chroniclers saying when they arrested some of the Incas, they would have this powdery substance that would explode the chains. This from a plant, it would explode the chains. So the idea presented in this paper is that this plant produces a mild acid called oxalate, something called oxalate. It's not my field of study, but that oxalate, that plant with oxalate mixed with like the pyrite from mining and these other acidic minerals could create a paste that would over time soften the outer layer of the stone. And what you see in Cuzco is, especially in between the cracks where they meet, you'll see some residue of something reddish.
Red, yep.
And so, and then in Leon or De La Vega's journals, they say the sun temple in Cuzco proper, so where the Coricancha is, they were seeing in between the stones gold. There was gold. What the paper's suggesting is maybe it wasn't gold. Maybe it was that mixture. It looked like gold because of the pyrite.
Right,
but
right.
Over time, it disintegrates into the stone. So what's happening here, I mean, look, you look at this as simple as possible. It looks like there's an outer casing. You know what I mean?
It does, yeah.
Now here, so let's remember what this inner stone looks like and move forward a little bit.
It really does look like a crust, a red crust.
It's thick, though. It's also so
yeah,
it's like
thick. It is thick.
It also appears like other stone, but if you look at this stone on the left,
yeah, it looks like it's peeling off the top, like the top part's losing it. And
yeah, I don't know what to make of it.
This is one of the weirder examples and one of the stronger examples of this. Like, I don't know if you've got other ones that are on the same level, but this seems to be one of the weirdest ones I've seen online, like, since it's been shared now.
It's
very clear.
Honestly, this is one of the benefits of having 5 terabytes of footage. I don't remember what else I got.
Right, yeah,
I just recorded the whole time. So,
well, sometimes you don't even realize while you're filming. And then you look at it afterwards and go, oh, damn, and kind of wish you'd loitered on it for a little bit longer because you didn't see it. But this is like,
it's so
weird, dude. And like the red, and so again, like just the kind of in a nutshell, this weird red mixture potentially softening the stone, all of these weird block architectural techniques in Peru. And then we come across this place where you've got this break. It looks a little bit like it's been pasted on and hardened. But yeah, I mean, like Marcel Fonti's having a field day with this one. This is like making for him. Like,
please repost this. Please, yeah. Let's get some answers.
Yeah, sure.
You know, we'll. I haven't seen anything quite like.
And is there anything else in this area that's as strong as this, or is it just this one wall where it's like really prominent?
It was this. I'll have to go back through the footage.
This
clearly stood out to me. But remember what the okay. So we have this white looking stone underneath or inside, right?
Mm.
Now, I'm walking. Remember that place?
Okay, so this is the underground element. Oh. I mean, it's very bleached. It could be from the soil, obviously.
That's what I'm thinking, but it also looks like...
Gosh. I mean, there's some of that red signature on the ones on the right-hand side. It looks a little bit like it's that.
This shocked me. I mean, this place is 8% excavated.
That's mind-blowing.
How much more of this is underneath?
Oh, my God, dude.
And so, I mean, it kind of, as I'm looking at it closer, it does, where we, the stone we were just looking at could be a different material.
Possibly,
or...
Shame you can't get down there, isn't it? Like, oh.
You know, I probably could have, but...
Probably. Yeah. I mean, certainly if you slip them a little bit of money, but, like, you know, nobody
there.
So. Nobody, yeah, you probably could have gone down there, but oh, well. Oh, well.
But, I mean, it's just this one little section that is...
Yeah.
But
like you said, like, this is indicating that there could be so many more underground elements of this that need to be excavated. Like, oh, my gosh.
Dude, this is underneath all of it. I mean, it's that whole section, this is what's going to be underneath. And,
yeah. Which, again, like, suggests what? Purposefully buried or buried through time? And then chronology comes back up, Inca versus what's not Inca, because, like, how is this buried?
Exactly. I mean,
600 years? That wouldn't be buried underneath the earth in 600 years like that. Not when you've got other Inca structures that are above the ground and fine. And so, again, huge question mark in the chronology.
So there, I'll stop sharing to pull something else up. I mean, I showed this on Rogan, but as we're talking about
ground
stuff.
I already know people are going to love this interview, man. I'm excited. Like... so good. I love it.
Dude, I'm so glad we were able to do this. All right, here we go. So this place is a place called Vinyake. And
Wow. Whoa. Now that is a very different architecture to what you see just above it.
I mean,
That looks like fucking modern.
Dude, doesn't it?
Oi.
It gets better. It gets better.
It looks like the foundations of a modern construction site.
And this one is either the one I just said was 4 or 8% excavated. This one is 4 or 8. One of them is 8%. One of them is 4%.
No way,
dude. It.
No way.
Prepare yourself. So there was an art. So this
is this named? Is this a named documented site?
This is, when you look on Google Map, this is in the Ayacucho region. When you look on Google Earth or Google Maps, it's called El Complejo de Wari. So they're saying it's a Wari complex.
Okay.
The Wari were the ones who came right before the Inca.
Before the Inca, yeah.
And, but the side name of this place is called Vinyake. The interesting thing about that is Cieza de Leon wrote that when they were in Tiwanaku and asked the natives who built Tiwanaku with the precision megaliths, they said, we don't know. It was already here. The people from the lake built it. The same people who built Vinyake. That's in the Chronicles. This place, Vinyake, is almost 1,000 kilometers from that Lake Titicaca.
Oh, wow.
So the suggestion is if the people from the lake came and built it, well, they moved all the way up here. It is similar. It is very, very similar. What's crazy is how deep it goes. And we're about to see that. So, yeah, this place right here, then kind of right next to, almost right next to it, just a little further up where like my mouse is right now, is where I'm going next.
Okay. Is that an original slab, by the way? That huge slab that was lying there? Yeah.
Yeah. Whew. So this is
just
a little bit further up.
Okay.
This is how deep. I mean, so 15 meters, we're talking like 50 feet.
So yeah, just for context, that top layer where it's kind of like a white drawing with the black square windows, that's where we just were. That's where you were just...
No. This is... It's very similar. Let me just
move this
forward. I'm going to turn the camera. There.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's a different one, but similar style.
But it's just right next to it.
Right.
It's just this one is where they went inside and found like mummies down here.
What?
At the bottom layers, 50 feet down.
Yo.
And so they call it El Complejo de Wari. The Wari construction is on the top.
Right.
I mean, there is no way. This is at the top of a huge mountain. At the top of a huge mountain. And it, just to think how many layers it goes down, there's no way that
the Wari were...
They didn't bury it. They didn't, you know, it had... The amount of time it takes for land to fill that over.
Exactly.
The fact that it goes so deep.
Oh, dude.
It's just, and it's constructed deep, you know? So
that's
the really interesting part.
Oh, my God.
So the entrance to that whole underground complex is like right here.
Yes, and you're not allowed to go down there, are you? No. Oh, man, that'd be cool.
4 or 8% excavated, man.
Gosh, listen to this, people. Like, this is why Peru. Oh, I mean, there's so many places in the world, but my God, like, Peru doesn't have just example after example of just kind of poking up out of the ground. Like, we've just got this tiny bit of something, and look how impressive it is. And guess what? There's 95% left to explore, and we haven't explored it. Like, this is just phenomenal.
And they're finding stuff down there. I mean, it's just like...
And again, the precision and the contradiction of, like, who was meant to have built this, and then the less precise work on top of it, like, it just all screams to something that we haven't figured out yet.
My thought process here is, because I don't have a clip of it, but there is, my thought process typically tends to err on the side of, look, this... We came across this site. The ancestors were here. They had some construction here. Well, we're going to revere it.
Exactly.
Know? And so we're going to build around it. We're going to add to it. That's something else that my Quechua guide told me. One of the Andean philosophies of constructing things is just this constant evolution. Things work in cycles. And so, adding these layers of change to something that's already there is the current evolution, yeah. You know, and so.
But how do you personally look at the weird contradiction where you go from really advanced megalithic work to slightly less inferior to even more inferior? Like, it just seems to go in reverse chronology of development. Things get less advanced as they get closer to our time period.
You know, I've been thinking about that a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if there was this, how do you lose the knowledge on how to construct things like this? But then you think about things like the quipus, like the ancient writing system, and the fact that nowadays we can't, there's nobody who can read a quipu because the Spanish killed them all.
Maybe someone in like a Amazonian tribe somewhere, but like no one that we can get hold of, right? Like, yeah.
And so that's to think, like, that was just 500 years ago, you know what I mean? And we lost that. It's lost. So given using that as the example, it wouldn't surprise me if, well, it's an example of just information being completely lost, how to do things. It's very likely that information was lost somehow, you know, whether it was because there was a cataclysm and like a whole generation was just.
But do you lean towards anything? Like, do you lean towards the idea that this could be cataclysm or
some of it?
Yeah,
some of it. I think that there's a lot of stuff on the coast that speaks to pre-cataclysmic onset of culture and civilization and construction. I think that stuff's going to be very hard to find.
Right.
They're on the coast. This being buried so
deep. Yeah, dude.
I definitely think that there was a period of time where we knew how to work with these stones and materials. And we lost it. We lost it. We probably lost it a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah, dude. Yep.
So that's... the evidence is there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this is 50 feet underground.
That's phenomenal. Phenomenal. And it's 50 feet underground continuing with the precision type of stonework. Come on, guys, you know. That's why I can't wait to see what they dig up around Sacsayhuaman, around Cusco. Like, you know, start confirming these Chincana labyrinths. I think there's a lot of reality to that, and it feels like they could be getting somewhere close. Last time I was there, you know, they were finding things already, and that was a while back now.
When I see that they just released some footage, Weird Old World released some footage from they're going down inside the Corticancha, and my Quechua guide said, they're as far as like valuable artifacts, they're not going to find any.
Oh yeah, I imagine
cleaned out.
Yeah, totally cleaned out, fully, probably by Spanish raiders, like, you know.
He says that every now and then there'll be somebody in Cusco who does renovations on their house or something, and
you're right,
and they have it all walled off, and then all of a sudden that person moves away. And
it had nothing to do with the gold amulet they found in the tunnel.
He says that happened.
And though, I mean, like you said, there's so many cave entrances and tunnels below Cusco. Imagine being a Cusco resident. I mean, the likelihood of you actually finding something on a relatively good plot of land is probably quite high. I imagine there's been quite a few people that have just gone into their own back garden, like go dig and try to find something, you know.
And I mean, the stuff is there.
Yeah,
the stuff is there. I'm going to stop sharing to see what else I can pull up here.
Yeah. Take me on your adventures. I love this, man. It's great. But like I say, at some point, I mean, it's such a journey, but I can't wait to go back out to Peru. It's truly one of my favorite places in the world.
So, all right, we'll do both. But do you want to see geometric terracing or, you know?
You have me a geometric. Just. All right. Play me where you want to go. Show everything like this. You know, don't hold back.
So this is all right. I'm just gonna pull up both clips so we can go from one to the other. This is the Waru structure. It's agriculture, and some of them are still in use today. This is in the high altiplano between Cusco and Lake Titicaca.
Check this out. That's cool, man. Wow.
It took me several attempts with the drone to get there.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's hard to pull off. Like a continuously ascending spiral panning shot. Like, are you kidding me? That's fucking hard. This is amazing. Oh, my God. So it's almost like a sun.
Dude, it's
and it's just a huge agricultural plot.
Yeah, and so they would have like the water going through the canals.
Oh, dude! And so how old is this? Is this meant to be like Inca or
no? Way before, and
way before, like, way. Before. It's it looks well maintained. Like they keep care of it. They maintain it.
If you can imagine, some of them are still in use.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's still in use,
and.
That's amazing. Well, holy shit.
There's only a couple of them left. All right, look at this pan.
Oh, you can see. Is there another one over there? Oh, well, there we go. That looks like a crop circle almost.
Doesn't it?
It looks like a crop circle.
And so just imagine, like, if you go on Google Earth in this area, you can see them from Google Earth. It's called Waru Waru.
Right.
And...
there's several of them in this area.
These are the main ones that are still whole. You can see pieces of other ones, like where modern agriculture has erased. So just imagine what this whole plain looked like.
Yeah. Oh my God. Right. A whole land of geometric agriculture growing and like harvesting. I mean, it must have been incredible in its heyday, literal heyday.
And to think like, you know, part of it makes me think of the stuff they're finding in the Amazon.
Right, like the big geometric plots.
Yeah. And so...
The geoglyphs.
And that's also like... Because I know in the Amazon, they've also found like they were traveling to the other ones via these canals when it got flooded, you know? And so, I mean, this is just brilliant agriculture techniques when it got flooded up here.
And we know that in the Amazon Basin, there's evidence for the, the actual soil itself being engineered, the terra preta, this biochar almost looks like the Amazonian Basin was cultivated as a garden of some form in certain areas. So like, you know, this spreading out is like, it's an agricultural tradition. And so much of like the ancient megalithic world also seems to be around agriculture, the turning of the sun and the moon and the phases and the seasons. And a connection, a very deep connection to nature, which of course would also manifest in incredibly intuitive ways of delivering agriculture to your people.
And so the thing that it also, like, I'm not sure how far out of, I mean, even going to old Ollantaytambo, you can see just driving through, I mean, every mountain is terraced.
And
like that, it's ancient terracing. So going from Cusco to Lake Titicaca, that's all you, just every mountain is terraced. And
like the whole landscape has just been engineered.
Landscape. And you think, how many people were living here? You know what I mean? Like, this was,
right.
You have enough to feed civilization after civilization with the amount that was happening here. And I asked one of the townspeople, because you would think you would see here in this, I was shocked on the drive from the path I took, at least Cusco to Lake Titicaca. Every now and then you'll see the chulpas, which are these funerary structures, these huge funerary structures on these on the top of these mountains. But you're not finding like cities. You're not finding cities in a good swath of the area. And it's like, that's strange. You have this much agriculture,
right,
but no cities. And what's happened a lot over time is people, modern civilization has repurposed a lot
just
of the blocks.
Taken apart, right?
Yeah, and so we've lost that. But they were there.
You still expect to see like foundations. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing is, like, where is, like, across this entire landscape, I don't see any signatures of ancient foundations or anything. Like,
not here, no.
Yeah, like it again, it just seems like a disproportionate level of agriculture in comparison to the lack of evidence for that level of civilization. So you're not wrong to, you know, point that out, even if they have repurposed it, because you see repurposing around Cusco and around all the other areas by Antetokounmpo, and like with that repurposing, there's still leftover geometry, there's still some structure. So yeah, it's interesting when it's barren but full of agriculture like this. Unless it was kind of like regions. I mean, imagine if it was just like, this was the farming region, like one of the apex farms. You know what I mean? And you don't live there, you just work there, and then you move. Yeah. You go back. Like, I don't know.
It's still, I mean, I'll have to go back and look at some of my Google Earth mapping to see how close some of the, I mean, there are little pockets of like villages or small settlements. But I mean, the other thing was, I guess the history portion of it is, I mean, you went to Ollantaytambo, you saw the granaries and stuff. Mm. So they would be actively cultivating all of this and store it somewhere hand out all over the region. And I mean, that's aside from the internal conflict, like, the Inca thrived with absorbing all these other cultures, and they're like, you know, hey, we can get you protection, we'll make sure all of you are fed. And the way it operated was, people from everyone would have to do their cultural duty to work for the Inca Empire. So you would have to go out there, and you had a legitimate duty to serve the empire on some level, to participate. But then you got all the support from them.
Right.
So this was between Cusco and Lake Titicaca. So you have Cusco, Lake Titicaca, and then what I'm about to show you is like down here, almost closer to Arequipa. Okay. Again, nobody's going. They've built it out. You can always tell when the Ministry of Culture has wanted to or attempted to want to start tourism somewhere, because you see these white stones and like these pathways going through a site. Just again, nobody's going here because it's so hard to get to.
Right. I mean, it looks like it's just in the middle of nowhere.
Check this place
out. Oh, this looks cool. Wow. Whoa.
Oh yeah, man.
Damn! Oh my god,
dude!
What the fuck is this, boy? Oh, it's almost so circular that it might trigger those people with that weird phobia where they look at things like crumb, they can't deal with it. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's almost at that level of like, what?
trigger warning.
Trigger warning. This may cause that weird phobia, dude. Oh, wow. So this is just an entire spaghetti junction of infrastructure going from the valley up, because I saw stairs being cut up the rock face as well, spilling out onto the top of this cliff. What is this, dude?
So they call it Maria Fortaleza. That's the Spanish name. The local name is Taracuyu. And so these circular structures, they remind me of the Colcas. If did you ever make it to Rakchi? Rakchi?
No, but I think I know what you're referring to, where you have these weird, like, holding pen type of things.
Yeah, and so Rakchi definitely still has some of the built-up ones.
Right.
And that would be, like, the homes. It almost looks like this place called Kulap from the Chachapoyas, which is much further north, much, much further north. This is so similar to that. It wouldn't surprise me if this was Chachapoyas construction.
Right.
They did find pre-Inc. The Chachapoyas were building a lot of stuff for the Incas. So the majority of this is Inca. Mm. There has been evidence of things they found signifying pre-Inca, like even before the Wari. What was interesting most to me, I don't have like an up close clip, but this area where my mouse is.
Yeah.
That's bedrock, the bedrock of the mountain. And there's carvings in there, water channels into those water pits. And reminds me of stuff you see in Cuzco, how they were carving the natural bedrock. And so it wouldn't surprise me if that was there first.
Right.
Little settlements, started building there. And then all of a sudden, over time, the Wari, the Inca, the Chachapoyas built on there.
Were you able to get like boots on the ground here? Or?
Oh, yeah. I just don't have that footage loaded.
Yeah. But there wasn't any megalithic or ashlar kind of block work.
Not really here.
Right.
The closest thing to is that
The bedrock carving.
Yeah.
Which is like believed by a lot of people to be kind of like first world architecture, and then the megalithic following, and then obviously the Inca after that. So yeah,
it's interesting.
God, what an incredible, like, regardless, like, you know, Inca is still amazing. Like, this is absolutely like,
dude, it
mind blowing.
So huge. I mean, this is like the stairwell going up.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Could you imagine this place in its like absolute prime?
I'll have to go back through the footage because I went to I went to another site that is very similar to that. And
it'd be great to get AI to reimagine these like a video.
Yeah, man.
That'd be really cool.
I'll let somebody else.
Approach that. You know, email Raul if you've got some AI specialty and you want to help out.
Let me find us some more stuff.
Yeah. So how many days into the expedition are we essentially at this point with these places?
Well, that was 30 something, I think. Mm. I mean, I got.
Do you have any idea how many miles you covered?
I do. I did map that out.
I was hoping you would, because I'd expect you to map something like that. How many miles have you covered, bro?
It's just thinking of the different regions, how much I want to say like 7,000.
Decent. Plus gradient. We have to remember, plus gradient. You know, this isn't flat, so that's a lot of hiking, my bro.
Yeah.
A lot of hiking and driving. And filming. Like, you must have been exhausted once you got done with everything.
Well, I got sick at one point because I went the day after I arrived in, because I also like, so look, Juarez and Huanuco, I'm going, and then you always have to touch back down in Lima.
Yeah.
Flights. And so you're going from really high altitude to really low altitude. And
it fucks you up. It fucks you up like it does.
I went on a 6-hour hike the day after I arrived in Cusco. That was
not the right move.
I mean, like, I know you're a bit more experienced than me, but that first day after arriving in Cusco was just nothing. I did nothing.
I wish I would have taken.
Yeah, they all messaged me like, you might be tempted to go to Sacsayhuaman. Just don't. Just chill. And even with that, I was suffering, man. The altitude is real up in Cusco.
It is, man. And but like also some of the places I went to, I'm pulling up like a whole bunch of different...
Yeah, man, take your time, don't worry.
The altitude in some of the places, like Huánuco and Huaraz, I mean, it's higher than
Cusco. Higher than Cusco.
Parts of it,
yeah.
Higher than Cusco.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Do you have to use oxygen at all, or you know?
I didn't. But my guides were, you know, when I would be lucky enough to have a guide at a site, they would definitely make fun of me for how out of breath I was every now and then.
Yeah, well, it was real funny. Gringo lungs. You got the old gringo lungs.
Yeah, as Peruvian as I am, that didn't
doesn't matter.
That didn't cross over.
Yeah, for real.
So this is. From where we just were, this is in the same region, pretty far away, but in the same region.
Okay.
It's all the stuff that didn't make it onto Rogan, so you're getting all of it.
You know, the beauty bit. Yeah, no, that's fine by me. I'll take your post Rogan scrap.
Dude, you're getting the good stuff here.
I'm kidding you, bro. It's fucking amazing. I'm fascinated by all of this, and I'm sure everyone listening and watching is just blown away by some of this. Like, right, here we are. Where we are now.
This is a place called... What's it called? Where's the title? Muyucuaya.
Muyucuaya.
This here... Now, it's not like precision.
But it's big, chunky blocks.
Yes. Yes.
It's not, you know, yeah. That looks
so
big.
It wouldn't surprise me if this was repurposed.
Repurposed, right.
And.
Because it almost looks like they've tried to do one of those archways and it's just super smart. It's
exactly.
That's quite like the ancestors, guys, but you tried.
They tried. But you can tell.
They did a better job on that one over there on the far side. It looks a little bit more symmetrical.
So this...
Wow. So it's just like proper hillside fortification. And is it going up in layers, right? There's like layers of this by the looks of it. Yep. Whoa. Okay, so this is a big complex.
It's huge.
Wow.
You see those structures we were just looking at?
Yeah, same circular foundations.
Now there is a place.
Wow, that's a big central point right there. Yeah.
Here, you have like going down into the ground.
Oh, okay. And do we have a like approximate percentage on excavation on this one?
No.
Looks like there could be a lot more left to find. Oh wow, yeah, you can really get a sense of that precision on that one that's almost complete.
On that one.
Yeah.
Next
to the heart.
Here's the unique thing. So the thatch roof is classic like Inca-ish. Now all these little piles, I don't think I have the on the ground footage. All these little piles that you see, the brown, it might be a little, that's all thatch.
Oh.
That's all thatch. It's all what we just... It's all the roofs. Whoa. Structure.
Oh, yeah, it just collapsed over time and...
I don't know if it's collapsed over... I have a feeling that they were destroyed.
Destroyed. Like, you think more like Spanish or...
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
Oh, man.
But, I mean, they're all over. They're... Every little patch is...
Yeah. I thought that they were mounds of dirt.
No, the roofs, they're all thatched.
Oh my gosh. So that one that's thatched that's remaining, that was a modern recreation, surely.
That was a modern recreation. I could tell that walking up to this place, they also had the white stones.
Right.
There's nobody there.
I mean, look at the landscape, guys. There's nothing else here. I mean, you're really just far out. Far, far out. Damn. And so is there, like, do you think that this is all just, like...
Here we go.
Who's this?
This is just a... I asked her if she knew anything, but she confirmed that they were the roofs.
Right.
She, let me see. She was sweet. She didn't know much about the site, which is...
I mean, I didn't hear a single thing she said. It was very, very quiet.
It was very quiet. She was very, very shy.
Yeah.
But I asked her what happened here, and she said she didn't know. I said, I think these are the roofs, no? And she said, yes. So she's just there with her sheep, you know what I mean?
Is she tending the site? Like, she's like, no. Would she just happen to be there?
She just happened to be there with
her. Oh, okay, interesting. Yeah.
So, I mean, that tends to happen a bunch. And in this region, though, I'm glad, like, sometimes you'll come across people who only know Quechua.
Right.
I don't know how to speak Quechua.
Yeah. So she actually spoke a bit of English.
Well, I mean, she spoke
Spanish. Yeah.
So that was that site.
So in that site, though, was that all Inca? Because, I mean, like you said, there was like some quite precise looking circular formations. Do you think that this was like at one point some megalithic work and repurposed? Or like...
I think some of it on those outer walls was a repurposing of megalithic stonework.
It seemed like
it doesn't
have the same hallmarks as the other Inca structures. It had too much size. The sizes were off.
Yeah. It was just like and even like the circular structures.
Yeah,
there wasn't much. It looks like all the megalithic stones were used for those outer walls.
Right.
There wasn't much of it inside the actual site itself. This is another one.
Wow, some big slabs. Gosh, look at these. What's happened here? So they're all blown around. What the fuck? This is like in Tetambo, where you just have them blown around the hillside as if someone just knocked over a Jenga tower.
How did Bronze Age era people pull something like this off? And why does this megalithic work seem to be spread around the hillside with huge breakage points, scattered like Jenga pieces, while the simple, rough-cut walls remain sturdy, stable, and still standing? Basically, the weakest architecture outlived the strongest architecture. It looks as if there was once much more of this, which would explain why massive blocks of granite are scattered across this entire area. Is it possible that these extremely large blocks just happen to be able to resist whatever force caused the rest of the structure to be essentially blown apart? Sliding down the hillside around it, embedded into the earth.
So they call it Los Piedras Cansadas, the tired stones. That big one.
That's a great name for them. They just gave up on building and just lay down. I like that.
And it's like, I don't know. Nobody knows, man.
It literally looks like a giant just came and kicked a tower and they all went splaying off in one direction. Like, that's so weird.
And I mean, you can see for a sense of scale, like,
these are huge.
One stone is like almost, I mean, 15 feet.
Is that a person standing next to one of the blocks in a black
shirt?
Yeah, that's you. That's you, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So for scale.
These are massive. Do you know what stone it is? Is it limestone? Is it granite? Is it?
I don't know enough about stone. I think
if it's very dense quartz, if you noticed any dense quartz, the granite, like, you know,
then it might be granite. I don't have the close up.
Oh yeah. It's hard to tell from here, but yeah, I mean, obviously,
it's got like the like little black and white specks.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have like a quartzish sheen to it.
Okay. Either way, massive slab of stone. Holy shit, man. That's crazy.
I mean, this is all... Eventually, I got to get to editing.
I like your jacket, by the way. That's a cool jacket.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you.
No, I like that. Yeah, I know. Once you get into the flow of the editing, though, it's such a joy. Like, it's kind of like, you know, pulling yourself up and getting it done. But I don't know about you, but once you get into a flow state with it, it's just great to start connecting all of the pieces of the adventure that you just had together. And it kind of, like, you know, like you said, sparks memories about things. And it's great. Oh, we got some subterranean stuff coming up here.
This is your place, Chavín, man.
Oh, Chavín de Huanta. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, I've talked about this just in terms of the fact that they've done acoustic studies down in these chambers. And it definitely seems to have been some form of ritualistic acoustic space. And then again, just like the layering that you see around Peru, there's a temple built on top of this, right?
On top of it.
Yeah.
And that temple has megalithic stones.
There you go.
But what's crazy, so...
Man, I'd love to go here.
Dude, it was not as easy as one would think, being such a prominent site. The unique thing, so where we're about to go is, there were two main underground sections, and you're not allowed to film in the one that has the Lanzón monolith.
Okay.
And that's like these, it's very similar to what we're about to see, but there's a centralized stele of this Lanzón monolith, this Fang deity. And that's the place where they found the evidence of psychoactive rituals. And I went in there, and I said this on Rogan, man, when you walk in there, like a stone cold sober, it's disorienting. It's weirdly like disorienting, but centering at the same time. It's strange. And like, something hits you. And so, it could be in part because you're going so deep underground. I mean, we'll just see how deep this goes.
But interestingly enough, it is mortar using wall construction here. We're not looking at megalithic precision joinery.
No.
Which is quite interesting. I would have actually expected it to be megalithic.
I mean, the different region? I mean...
Yeah, I don't know, yeah. But I mean, still, like, structural integrity, this is incredible. This is all underground. Holy shit, look at that, dude. Like... I've seen this on Google Images, but oh man.
And this is just, they have all the other sections walled off. It just.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how large the footprint of the actual underground space is?
I'll have to just do research on
it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how much of a system it's meant to be. It's like.
But all these different rooms. I mean, this is just. It's crazy.
Different alcoves and yeah. And like they've measured that there's like infrasonic reverberation, infrasound like gets pushed through the system. And that's the kind of sound that you don't hear. It's below the threshold of human hearing, but it reverberates through your chest cavity. So like when you're in like a rave or something and you feel that bass going through your ribcage, that's infrasound. And that's the kind of sound that can have a very interesting effect biophysically on the human brain in terms of like tuning the brain frequency, which isn't woo-woo magic. Like there's a literal biophysical change in frequency from like theta and alpha and beta, all these different brain states. And they've known now for a long time in terms of acoustic studies that infrasound and ultrasound have these effects. So seeing it engineered in these ancient spaces is one of the most fascinating elements of looking into these things for me.
Dude, you feel it.
Yeah, right, 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 right.
You feel it. Your jacket ruffling. Like, you feel that bounce back to you. You know what I mean? It's yeah, so yeah.
Like
precisely married.
Reflects back.
And so...
It's amazing. Dude.
To think what rituals might have been happening. I mean, this is the place to elevate your consciousness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's... the resonance was just... I mean, maybe that's what hit me, because there were people in the...
For sure.
You can't go in the part where the Lanzón monolith is any, or you can't film it. You can go see it.
Why do you think you can't film it? It's a bit weird, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, their bullshit reasoning is because people don't know how to turn off their flash on their phone, and the flash somehow ruined. But the stone, the monolith itself is behind a plexiglass, so I don't know, man. Maybe they don't want people to...
Because when you take photos, you're gonna see them phantoms. You see those ants. No, you start seeing some shit. You know,
a bunch of orbs right here. Like,
whoa, hey, there we go. You know.
But I mean, so this is inside the mountain, and that was just a portion of it. You know.
Absolutely incredible. I mean, it kind of reminds, it's like the Hypogeum. I mean, in all honesty, the Hypogeum. If you ever get the chance, have you been to Malta?
I have not.
if you get the chance to go to Malta, you should go. I mean, it's just incredible in terms of especially similarities between Peruvian architecture, Egyptian architecture, and Maltese, and even like architecture in Ireland that comes back from like the Neolithic period, where you just see these same kind of reflections. But the Hypogeum is meant to be this kind of acoustic resonance space. And it's like the only thing that I can compare to in terms of you going to Chavín de Huanta is like you feel the resonance and just the fucking kind of intensity of the space you're in when you're going through it. It's so ancient, it's so old, and like this, you know, very restricted. You can't go to everywhere in the Hypogeum. It just seems to be like you know, underground subterranean resonance spaces, which I actually think we're likely intuitively come across, because if you think about like natural limestone tunnels and caverns, there's an acoustic resonance in some of these spaces that actually naturally can shift the brainwave function. Like they found caves and tunnel systems that are completely natural, but will bounce back these types of sound frequencies in a way that starts to influence meditation. So the idea that maybe at one point we were doing this in a very archaic way, just inside natural geological tunnels, and then we got to the point where we were able to engineer these things.
Yeah.
It was more specific, like kind of fine tuning the harmonic, you know? And then we lost all that knowledge. And then we discovered it again through the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences in conjunction with the Central Intelligence Agency. So, you know, we're figuring this stuff out much later on. It's crazy. Crazy.
It's funny. Journeys Out of the Body was one of the...
Oh, yeah, dude.
One of the first books I read. I was trying to figure out what was happening in my meditations, and I opened up...
Right.
Journeys Out of the Body, and it described some of this. I was like, well, this is spot on. And
so you had some like out of body meditation experiences?
Yeah, I would. So I never shared about this before. It was back in college. I mean, when I was like meditating on the daily, like,
yeah, dude,
you started to feel the vibrations and stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah, I've been there. Yeah.
But then things would feel dark for a little, like it would there was a presence there, but like not, didn't feel good. It felt like it was scary.
Interesting.
And so like those presences would kind of like swoop at my energy or something. And then like just with my spiritual beliefs and like connecting to something greater than me, I was like, all right, well, y'all do what you want, but you can't touch like this,
right?
This God part of me, you know what I mean? And I was like, what is this? And it was in Journeys Out of the Body where they kind of describe that, where when you hit some sort of state, you become like a beacon for whatever's out there.
Yeah, dude.
But there's a threat. If you stay at it, there's a threshold that crosses. Like you go through that space into a much more ethereal space. And so after time, I would reach that. But it helped. Early on back in college, like it described what I was feeling or experiencing.
Well, dude, like this is one of the things that, again, like really interests me. And it's one of the elements of like my research where I feel like it's just a language barrier thing for most people in terms of how you articulate and explain these things, because you can kind of look at it in terms of, oh, it's like woo woo energies and like, oh, they're swooping in and getting some energy I'm putting out. But then when you realize that you're a bioelectric being that outputs electromagnetism from your heart, from your brain, you create this toroidal electromagnetic field around your body, you're immersed in an ocean of electromagnetism, hard radiation, soft radiation. Like we're literally swimming in an ocean of energy. And so the idea that there are intelligences or even just kind of almost parasitic animalistic bacterium that exist on spectrums of energy that feed off of your electromagnetic output. And I had experiences when I was like deep into the UFO subject, and it was one of the reasons actually why I became it's a primary reason why I became a public speaker and named my channel Project Unity, is I had experiences with orange orbs of light. I don't know if I ever told you about
it. You told me. You did.
So like, you know, I don't know what they are, but I'm leaning towards the idea that I was outputting enough high vibration electromagnetic energy in a state of like
to receive,
you know, euphoria and excitement and to receive, like for whatever reason they are attracted to this type of output. Maybe even as like I was feeding them, who knows, maybe they just swam up to have a little bit of my magnetic energy and then they go off again. It doesn't have to be like this deep esoteric, like, you know, the angels came down from the clouds. It could be an unknown intelligence or an unknown animal that's living on the energy spectrum, bro.
And may not even be conscious or aware of what it's doing. You know?
It's just intuitively, instinctively trying to get some nourishment from the thing it needs, which happens to be EMG, and you put out EMG. So it's like, you know, that could very well be the case. And
so for me in that state, I was just like, there's a part of me that you can't touch. You know what I mean? And that really grounded me. That really centered me. And then I just remember at that point, just with the metaphysics I was saying, like I would pray for these things. You know what I mean? And like send out good.
Yeah, man.
Take what you need. You know. And through that though, there was. I don't know. Yeah, my practice has fallen off for 20 years. But
hey, man,
when I was in there,
it's 2026. Like we're all losing our minds. Yeah. But it's difficult for everybody right now, you know.
But I mean, to have a space though, just to circle back, to have a space that amplifies that.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Is so. So enriching, you know what I mean? And like, that's what it's
like a technology. It is like, okay, we're capable of doing this. The sound seems to help. Right. We're going to engineer something to hyper focus this ability so that we can penetrate straight through some adept who wants to come down and experience this. They'll go right into that astral through this, you know, cut out the middleman, streamline the process. And that seems to be what it is.
And so the benefits nowadays where there's, I mean, I just think to get back to a meditation, there's so much you got to break through, man. Like just so much
program. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, they were starting off with a template of like agricultural connection.
Right.
We're starting off with like TikTok and like, you know, the dumbest stuff just being thrown down your brain. So we're in an uphill battle from the start, just in like, you know, the kind of like modern world we live in is absolutely true. From a cellular to a psychological level, we've got pollutants coming at us from all angles. So, you know, it's a difficult thing. And these places seem to be venerating a state of consciousness that we, for the most part, have ignored, either laughed at or even criminalized in terms of trying to reach it through certain types of substances and things that we were exploring as ancient ancestors, whether it's peyote or ayahuasca, you know. So it's like, again, a signature of a lost type of consciousness, not just a lost culture, but a lost level of consciousness and we are living. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I explained the psychoacoustic thing to Alex Jones, he was like, oh, so they're basically like sound drug temples or drug temples for sound. I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what we're talking about.
And to elevate your consciousness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's it's been a long time since I've done psychedelics. But I mean, there's just on that. It's like there's a whole world beyond here. We're going to show it to you. Now, you know. You know, and at some point for me, the reason I haven't done it alone, it got to a point where it's just like, all right, bro, now this is access. What you wanted is, so now the bad trips are going to start. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so right.
We taught you what you, and
move on.
Exactly. Take that and you don't lose it. It literally opens something up where you can't go back to the ignorance of it.
No, you know, it's the analogy of Plato's cave. You know, once you get out of there and you see that that's the reality that you're in, you can't go back to the cave and pretend that that's reality anymore. It's impossible.
Nope.
You know, is there anything else you want to show us in terms of the trip? I don't even know how long we've been going now because I terminated the first part of the interview. So, like, I'm good to go for as long as you want to go, bro. So, like, you know,
I'd say I got another 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What is something that you want to like highlight?
Let's see. Let's.
We've covered a lot of interesting things already. It's fantastic. No more. No more elongated skulls on this trip, though.
Oh no! There, I got you.
Oh, you found some? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fun.
So this though was in Nazca, and
nice big old geoglyph.
Yeah, but and what you'll see is how geometric.
It's a square, isn't it? Squaring the circle.
It is squaring the circle.
Yeah.
I messed up my drone, so there's a little like.
Yeah. I mean, I bet you're dealing with wind up at that point as well, like in terms of holding the drone. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Very
angle here. Circles.
Yeah.
Circle. Little plus symbol here. I mean, like, I don't know what is going on here.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So here's the thing. All right. where my mouse is, you can see there used to be a line going. There's a circle here. There's another circle here. So there's a whole other circle going around this.
Right, thing. Right.
You can actually see it connects with these ones up top.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I see that.
Yeah, man. It's wild.
Whoa. And are these documented or are these like undocumented? There's no.
They are documented. Meaning there's a place marker, I think, on.
Okay.
You know what? Actually, these ones. No, not these ones. There's a place further up in the valley where they are, where you can see them on the map. These ones, there's nothing.
No mark
on the map.
Why were they doing this,
dude?
Why were they doing this?
But you, because it, like, there's a plus symbol here, plus here.
Circle
goes all the way around. These are looting pits here.
Yeah.
Fortunately.
Yeah.
So the triangle. The triangle's on top. And then over here.
Another circle. Oh, with like two more circles within it. Three.
There is a faint one here, so there's four.
Okay, four.
There's another triangle here going the other way. There's another circle here. Like, what the hell is going on, man?
It's dribbling into the sand, but on like a huge, huge level. Like, this is crazy.
And it's so faint because like cars have driven through here clearly.
Yeah, you can see a road. Like,
there used to be a circle here. Through. Like, this is.
Do you have any theory on what the fuck they were doing?
I honestly haven't given it too. Like, these ones are just so mathematic.
Yeah, it's really weird, like coded, like symbolic.
Good. Yeah. I mean, just these perfect geometric.
Dude, it's real weird,
man.
I love wild. It.
And honestly, it wasn't even until showing you this that I saw the pattern in the other.
Right.
I can only imagine what's going to happen when I go back and look at some of this stuff. Yeah. And I didn't know. I was on this road right here. And I looked to my right, and it was like, because I had seen the ones further up the valley on Google Earth, and it says like geoglyphs geometrica, so geometric geoglyphs. I was like, this looks like another one. So I stopped and I got my drone out, and that's honestly, it's like with his going back on Google Earth might give the.
Yeah, that might be a good idea actually. But yeah, that's so weird. That's so weird.
So there's that. This I showed on Rogan, but it's worth seeing.
Yeah, no, roll it. I already see some skulls coming up.
So this is in the, when I say Cusco is a region, right? So the Cusco region is huge.
It's a very, very big region.
And just like a region like Lambayeque or Arequipa. And so this is in part of the Cusco region, closer to Arequipa.
Wow.
Definitely elongated.
Oh, yeah, that one on the right for sure.
Right. And this.
Yo. Oh, wow. Damn, just huge burial pit.
Huge burial pits, man.
And this is the thing, like, I know, like, in terms of talking about the idea that the, like, the Nazca mummies and the tridactyls could be just, like, these repurposed bone pits. And there's, you know, I mean, you showed me in the last conversation we had, like, there's just so much evidence for looting and desecrating these graves and corpses. So, you know, I definitely hold, a lot in regard to the idea that there could be, you know, this mass fraud with the graves and the remains. But I, like I said to you when I was chatting to you on WhatsApp, like, I still hold space for the idea that there could be a little bit of a kind of smokescreen being put around something quite important, just because of the references that you do see in antiquity in Peru in relation to like three-fingered, three-toed beings, and again, like a wider historical context for that stuff as well in Egypt and other areas. Yeah. So it just makes me wonder if maybe something was discovered and a massive smokescreen has been put around it with a lot of frauds.
I think time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell.
And I think that, you know, as for me, there was just too many things saying, too many things. I don't know. It's like when you're a kid and you get like, what's wrong with this picture? You know what I mean? Like a placemat at a restaurant or something. There were too many things for me to, I mean, you're absolutely right, though. It is incredibly peculiar that, like, the petroglyphs and the textiles and the tapestry show these three-fingered beings. So I'm confident that time will tell as more research is put out. And I think, personally, I'm like, you know, you do micro CT scans.
Yeah, no, I mean, for real, right? Yeah.
Because I didn't ever expect to learn as much as I did about CT scans.
You learn when you need to go down a rabbit hole, isn't it? Like the things you pick up.
Dude, and we both know how when you're in a rabbit hole, I mean, it's just layer after layer after layer.
Exactly.
Especially with this kind of stuff.
But so this place here is, these were tombs, specifically where they bury their dead, and like, dude,
just everywhere,
and they're carved or they're built into the cliff sides, kind of like the American Southwest,
which right?
Really, really intriguing. That's why I went to made it a point to get to this place, because I know you see structures like that in the Chachapoyas area. This rope here, so I have an image of it. I'll pull up in a second. Oh, I didn't show this one. This is this is a Project Unity exclusive.
Nice. Wow. Yeah, literally just built into the cliffside.
And you can still see, like, on some of the skull, like, that's the residue of skin.
Oh, damn. Yeah, on that one there. Wow. Yeah, because the other ones are like polished clean. I don't know why that one looks like it's still got so much left over. Is that red ochre or
no? So
more of that damn paste.
I think I thought it was paint, but the guy and part of me still thinks it's might be paint. But the guy who took me, he was the president of this community, like this whole area. And he said it was actually, this looks like paint though.
Yeah.
He said some of the structures, let me see if I can, he said this, okay, so this doesn't look like paint here. This looks like, he said some of this is the mud. They use different colored mud.
Right,
so
right.
I'm going to give you a reference. So that rope you see, this is in a museum in Cuzco. What I'm about to show you. You see how they're wrapped up?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so that's
what... Oh, so that's the rope. That's the binding rope. Wow.
That's that. And so that...
They'd kind of make it into like almost like a little basket.
Like a basket. Yeah. And so that's what all these people used to be like before the looters
came and just fucking wrecked the whole place. Man, it's so disrespectful, isn't it? It's just like shockingly disrespectful.
Dude, the baskets they were in.
Yeah. Do you ever get worried about, like, you know, coming up here and there's just a waquero just doing
that thing, like,
brandishing an AK-47 at you or something? Like,
I've actually expected that.
Never had it.
Thank God.
Well, touch wood, yeah.
I would hope it'd be like, hey man, do your thing. I'm gonna do my thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, we're good. So, I think that's all I got.
Nice. Well, I'm going
through everything.
What a trip. what a trip. I mean, I bet you're like, just still recovering from the whole experience. You know what I mean? And then Joe Rogan straight after, pretty much.
Like, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Like, that was
dizzy.
Within 2 weeks since being back. And now, you know, I mean, that Rogan effect is real.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, like, how's your bump been?
It's been incredible. And,
yeah.
And just the comments people are making, and Joe said this on the show, you know, to think that I'm one of the only people going out here and getting this footage, and now we're showing it to millions.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for that experience. I'm grateful.
See, that's
for
why
you shouting me out. Like, it, people need to see this stuff, and I'm glad that the boost in the viewership has increased, because that's what it's all about. That's why I did it, you know, to show everybody, and so it doesn't get lost, and that there is a historical record of it.
Yeah.
And so,
and I think you're also proving that, like, a place like Peru, like, my God, you can still have adventure. You can still find things that people aren't finding. Like, the map isn't just completely colored in yet at all.
No.
You know?
Not at all.
You know, people reminisce of the days of the 1800s explorers going off and going out and finding. You can still do it. Raul is proof of this. Like, you know, these places are not being, like, seen until now. So, like, you know, get out there, guys. If you have the chance to go out to Peru, you should
get
out.
Safe.
Yeah, be safe. Be safe. Are you, like, do you do tours?
I'm starting to. I'm doing a tour with Mike Collins in Mexico in October, and then a tour with Hugh Newman in November.
Oh, brilliant.
But I'm going to start doing my own stuff. I'm trying to work with, get the right connections to, I mean, that was another blessing of this trip. I made a lot of connections with the local townspeople, and so they are very welcoming to having a small group come in. And so I'm looking at creating something more, not like a 40-person tour or something, like 12 people maybe.
Yeah.
Something more intimate where, you know, we got to talk beforehand and see what your health is like, to see making it to some of these places. You know, I'll try to make it as easy as possible on people, but it's also like I want people to be able to experience this stuff too, because it changes you. It changes you.
It does. And, like, even if you can't go out physically, at least you're providing footage, drone videos. Some of the only modern media that exists of these places, which is just such a great service to people who can't get out and want to see these things. So you did a great job. I really found it funny on Joe Rogan when he was just like, you know, and it's just Raul going these places. Like, who is this guy? Like, there's all these amazing places. There's just this dude, Raul, fucking doing it. I just love that. Like, it's true though, isn't it? Because, you know, with all of these mainstream institutes and archaeological institutes, it comes down to, you know, just a guy with a camera who's got passion and 2 feet and a YouTube channel, and he goes out and he does it. And that's what's really inspiring to a lot of people, man. But, like, you know, hats off to you for being that kind of person.
Thank you, man. I'm so glad you and I connected at the Cosmic Summit. And
me too, man. Like, I'm really glad that I chose to listen to you, because sometimes when people run up to me, I just want to ignore them. But I didn't want to. No, you're just like, I really want to show you something on my laptop. I was like, okay, let's see what this is, you know. But you're like, from the get-go, when he opened up his PDF, I was just like, oh shit, wait, what? All right, like, yeah, let's stay in touch. And I'm so glad we did, bro, because yeah, like, we had a great time there. I'm no doubt we're gonna have some adventures in 2026 and onwards. But yeah, like, hats off to you for doing everything you do. Congratulations on Joe Rogan. You deserve it.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, man. Thank you. And yeah, dude, everybody should stay tuned, man. Jay and I are planning some stuff for the future.
For sure. Where can people find your work, bro? Do you want to just give yourself a quick plug?
Pillars of the Past 101 on YouTube, Pillars of the Past on Instagram, and pillarsofthepast.com, where, you know, links to tours and everything will be right up on there.
Links will be in the description box below, guys.